The views and opinions expressed during this program are not necessarily those of Overseas Radio Network, the Expat Broadcasting Group, the staff, management, or broadcast partners. All information provided is for educational purposes only. Before taking action, consult a licensed professional.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Columbia.
And we're back. This is Columbia Calling. I am your host, Richard McCall, and we are very pleased to have Carl Warswick with us, a football expert. That's football, soccer, to those of you in the United States. A football expert who's up sticks from the United Kingdom, from Lancashire, near to Wigan. And he's living in Bogota, Colombia now, and he's writing about Colombian football for the Anglo Press. Carl, welcome.
Welcome. Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure.
You're very welcome. Now, listen, we have to ask you a few things. I mean, how much work do you get writing about Colombian football for the UK press?
So I write mainly for the UK press, but anything in English, really. But because I worked as a journalist for 7 years in England, I have my most contacts there. I would say that there's enough to keep me busy, but not to sustain myself in a full-time job. And for that reason, I'm now currently exploring the possibilities of working in the Colombian press.
Ah, very interesting. Now, that's very interesting. But then, and so how did you come to move to Colombia and, you know, decide to dedicate yourself to Colombian football?
Okay, so first, I worked for a newspaper in England. And this newspaper is called The Morning Star. I don't know if you've heard of it.
Is that in Manchester? No.
It's actually a national newspaper that was founded in 1930, and it was the newspaper of the Communist Party.
The Star. Yes, the Star.
For many, many years.
Yeah.
I spent 7 years there, and it's a small operation, but it spread across the whole of Britain. And they had a Morning Star. Yeah. Used to learn English from it in the Soviet Union. I used to sell, 10,000 copies a day over there. So I spent 7 years learning my trade there, but I would always come over to Latin America to watch football in the generous holidays they gave me. They didn't pay us very well, but they gave us a lot of holidays. So in 2007, I came over to cover the Copa America, the competition that involves all the countries of South America. It was in Venezuela, and so I was based. I actually met Hugo Chavez then, and I was based right on the border of Venezuela, in the city of San Cristobal. I don't know if you know this city. But I was based there because all Venezuela, is the only place in Venezuela really where football is bigger than baseball. And so they based the team there and they played all their matches there. But I have 5 days free. So the temptation to come to Colombia was a little bit too much. So I put my head over the border, and I absolutely loved it. I mean, I spent a lot of time in Venezuela, and I do like Venezuela, but it's very, very difficult, and there's a lot of bureaucracy and just small things that are difficult to get done, and it was like a breath of fresh air popping over to Cúcuta, and I just decided, right, I've got to come back, and because of some, I'd done 7 years in England as a journalist, and I got a little bit tired, a little bit stale, and I thought, right, let's head to Colombia, and concentrate on covering Colombian football with the run-up to the World Cup was my sort of motivation. And also the politics and the history of Colombia was a big draw as well. So that's...
It's interesting you've mentioned on something that we touch on quite a lot here, is the bureaucracy. And you're saying that Venezuela has more bureaucracy than Colombia. It's almost hard to believe, but knowing Venezuela, I can believe it.
Yeah, I would say so. Although I've got less experience of trying to get things done, you know, bureaucratic things done in Venezuela than Colombia. But just small things like ordering food in a restaurant, getting buses, those kind of things are just steeped in bureaucracy. And I found Colombia, I don't know if it was because now my Spanish is pretty good, I can get around, I can make myself understood, and I often do interviews in Spanish. And in that period, I didn't speak Spanish quite as well, so that may have compounded my frustration in Venezuela. But I probably spent about 6 months in Venezuela. Some absolutely fantastic things about Venezuela, but yeah, the bureaucracy was that drove me a bit crazy. As it has been in Colombia, yeah.
Well, yeah.
House, and that in itself was just to rent a place was sapped the life out of me.
Now, and Dominic, so you've now been here more or less 3 years. You're writing about Colombian football. You've brought your father over to travel through Colombia, and now you're showing him how much you love this country.
Yeah, that's right. He's just arrived about a week ago. It's his first time outside of Europe, so everything's a little bit of a shock culturally to him, but he loves walking in the country, and so that's what we're planning to do while we're out here, because in my experience, I think I've travelled to about 45 countries. Colombia's the most beautiful of them all in terms of its diversity. It's got jungle, desert, plains, beaches. It's got a lot, really. So based in the centre of the country, the capital, Bogota, it's just a short plane ride to whichever tickles your fancy, really.
Yeah, it's fantastic in that respect. And where am I speaking to you at the moment? Where are you?
I'm in the coffee country, so just west of Bogota, about 7-8 hours west of Bogota.
7-8 hours by land, and in which town in particular in the coffee?
It's called Salentos. So we've just been in Armenia, and we spent a night in Ibagué, and now we're in Salentos, a small little village right in the middle of the coffee country.
And I bet your father's loving it there.
He is. He's not a big coffee drinker. He drinks about 8 cups of tea a day, but I'm certainly a coffee drinker. We just spent the entire morning, 4 hours, doing a tour around the coffee farm and learning all about Colombian coffee, the process and the history and the problems of Colombian coffee, the low prices and the impending strike that
it's coming up, it's impending strike. But this is fantastic. I mean, what a nice place to be based with your father, to be with your father at this very moment. Salento, beautifully, a very picturesque town in a very calm, very easy to visit section of Colombia, and it's right next to the Valle de Cocora with the national tree, which is up there, the wax palm, and lots of hummingbirds and other bird life, and people can take horse rides, and it's really stunning. I mean, you're pushing out the boat there for your dad to take him to places like this.
So. I mean, my dad's been to Transdniestria, he's been to Moldova, but I think this is his most ambitious traveling project, but he's absolutely loving it. He didn't like Bogota so much just because of the noise and the fumes and the traffic, but now we're out in the sticks, I see almost a different man.
I'm glad to hear it. Well, Bogota is tough. I mean, it's a capital city, and it's struggling to find itself is what I say about it, but it's got something going on all the time. It's very bubbly. It's an effervescent city. You just have to know and have to sort of come to terms with Bogota. But anyway, so we've got Carl. Carl is a football expert. That's football.
Absolutely.
Soccer.
Yeah, 3 years.
And we're talking about, well, living in Colombia, and we're talking about football, soccer in Colombia. And Carl is here as a freelance journalist. He's English, and he's been here 3 years. He's an expert from the UK press, and he's decided to make his home here in Colombia. Anyway, at the moment, as we're talking, he is taking his father around the country. This is a big deal, you know, to bring your parents over to Colombia, bring your father over to Colombia and show him that not everything is blowing up, and it is a good place to come and visit, and you're not going to get kidnapped. But Carl is an expert in soccer, and that's what we're principally talking about today. And what is exciting in Colombia is to go to a football match. Carl, if you were to say to anyone, if you had to go and see a football match, which football match and where would you go in particular?
well, should we start with the national team? Are you mainly talking about a Colombian league game?
Let's start with the Colombian. Let's start with the national team, like you say.
With the national team? Oh, yeah. Well, most of the national games, well, the team plays in Barranquilla on the coast now. And in contrast to in Bogota, the capital, because before Peckerman, the national coach, took over, there was a big debate. Where are we going to play? Are we going to play in that altitude of Bogota and use that as our advantage? Or are we going to be playing the boiling heat of Barranquilla? And supposedly, I mean, the head coach Peckerman is very, very media shy. He refuses to talk to the media, and that's quite unusual in the modern era. But supposedly he asked all the players, hey, where do you want to play? And they all responded, Barranquilla is our house, and that's where we're going to be based. Now, I think that's for two reasons. One, unlike in Bogota, where it's always a little bit nervy, a bit edgy, I've seen lots of cases of crime, of violence boiling over in the terraces. In Barranquilla, it's a complete party. Everybody's just drinking, getting to know each other. It's a complete party. Second reason is, historically, I think the most vociferous voice for the birth of Colombian football is Barranquilla. Some people say Santa Marta, some others even say Pasto, but I think Barranquilla argues the case the strongest, and so that was where football began in Colombia. So yeah, if anybody can get to a game, it's an exciting time for Colombian football. They're on the brink of qualifying for the World Cup. It's the first time in 14 years, so there's a real buzz about it. Yeah, ranked third in the FIFA World Rankings, and whatever the problems there is and criticisms of the FIFA World Rankings, it does show that Colombian football is perhaps at its highest level ever. We will see next year, but it's doing well.
That's very exciting to be here in Colombia at this time. We are talking with Carl Warswick, a football expert. That's soccer to you, those of you in the United States. He's from the UK. This is Colombia Calling. We'll be right back. I'm Richard McCall.
Pack your bags and explore the world with us. You're listening to the Overseas Radio Network.
Va subiendo la corriente con chinchorro y atarraya.
And we're back. This is Colombia Calling. I am your host, Richard McCall, and we are very pleased to have Carl Warswick with us, a football expert. That's football, soccer, to those of you in the United States. A football expert who's up sticks from the United Kingdom, from Lancashire, near to Wigan. And he's living in Bogota, Colombia now, and he's writing about Colombian football for the Anglo Press. Carl, welcome.
Welcome. Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure.
You're very welcome. Now, listen, we have to ask you a few things. I mean, how much work do you get writing about Colombian football for the UK press?
So I write mainly for the UK press, but anything in English, really. But because I worked as a journalist for 7 years in England, I have my most contacts there. I would say that there's enough to keep me busy, but not to sustain myself in a full-time job. And for that reason, I'm now currently exploring the possibilities of working in the Colombian press.
Ah, very interesting. Now, that's very interesting. But then, and so how did you come to move to Colombia and, you know, decide to dedicate yourself to Colombian football?
Okay, so first, I worked for a newspaper in England, and this newspaper is called The Morning Star. I don't know if you've heard of it.
Is that in Manchester? No.
It's actually a national newspaper that was founded in 1930, and it was the newspaper of the Communist Party.
The Star.
Many, many years.
Yeah.
I spent 7 years there, and it's a small operation, but it spread across the whole of Britain. And they used to learn English from it in the Soviet Union. They used to sell, 10,000 copies a day over there. So I spent 7 years learning my trade there, but I would always come over to Latin America to watch football in the generous holidays they gave me. They didn't pay us very well, but they gave us a lot of holidays. So in 2007, I came over to cover the Copa America, the competition that involves all the countries of South America. It was in Venezuela, so I was based. I actually met Hugo Chavez then, and I was based right on the border of Venezuela, in the city of San Cristobal. I don't know if you know this, city. But I was based there because Venezuela is the only place in Venezuela really where football is bigger than baseball, and so we based the team there, and they played all their matches there. But I have 5 days free. So the temptation to come to Colombia was a little bit too much, so I popped my head over the border, and I absolutely loved it. I mean, I spent a lot of time in Venezuela, and I do like Venezuela, but it's very, very difficult, and there's a lot of bureaucracy and just small things that are difficult to get done, and it was like a breath of fresh air popping over to Cúcuta, and I just decided, right, I've got to come back, and because of some... I'd done 7 years in England as a journalist, and I got a little bit tired, a little bit stale, and I thought, right, let's head to Colombia and concentrate on covering Colombian football with the run-up to the World Cup. That was my sort of motivation. And also the politics and the history of Colombia was a big draw as well. So that's...
It's interesting. It's interesting. You've mentioned something that we touch on quite a lot here, is the bureaucracy. And you're saying that Venezuela has more bureaucracy than Colombia. It's almost hard to believe, but knowing Venezuela, I can believe it.
Yeah, I would say so. Although I've got less experience of trying to get things done, you know, bureaucratic things done in Venezuela than Colombia. But just small things like ordering food in a restaurant, getting buses, those kind of things are just steeped in bureaucracy. And I found Colombia, I don't know if it was because now my Spanish is pretty good, I can get around, I can make myself understood, and I often do interviews in Spanish. And in that period, I didn't speak Spanish quite as well, so that may have compounded my frustration in Venezuela. But I probably spent about 6 months in Venezuela. Some absolutely fantastic things about Venezuela, but yeah, the bureaucracy was that drove me a bit crazy. As it has been in Colombia, yeah.
Well, yeah. House,
and that in itself was just to rent a place was sapped a lifestyle for me.
Now, and Dominic, so you've now been here more or less 3 years. You're writing about Colombian football. You've brought your father over to travel through Colombia, and now you're showing him how much you love this country.
Yeah, that's right. He's just arrived about a week ago. It's his first time outside of Europe, so everything's a little bit of a shock culturally to him, but he loves walking in the country, and so that's what we're planning to do while we're out here, because in my experience, I think I've travelled to about 45 countries. Colombia's the most beautiful of them all in terms of its diversity. It's got jungle, desert, plains, beaches. It's got a lot, really. So, based in the centre of the country, the capital, Bogota, it's just a short plane ride to whichever tickles your fancy, really.
Yeah, it's fantastic in that respect. And where am I speaking to you at the moment? Where are you?
I'm in the coffee country, west of Bogota, about 7-8 hours west of Bogota.
7-8 hours by land, and in which town in particular in the coffee?
It's called Salentos. So we've just been in Armenia, and we spent a night in Ibagué, and now we're in Salentos, a small little village right in the middle of the coffee country.
And I bet your father's loving it there.
He is. He's not a big coffee drinker. He drinks about 8 cups of tea a day, but I'm certainly a coffee drinker. We just spent the entire morning, 4 hours, doing a tour around the coffee farm and learning all about Colombian coffee, the process and the history and the problems of Colombian coffee, the low prices and the impending strike that
it's coming up. It's impending strike. But this is fantastic. I mean, what a nice place to be based with your father, to be with your father at this very moment. Salento, beautifully, a very picturesque town in a very calm, very easy to visit section of Colombia, and it's right next to the Valle de Cocora, with the national tree, which is up there, the wax palm, and lots of hummingbirds and other bird life, and people can take horse rides, and it's really stunning. I mean, you're pushing out the boat there for your dad to take him to places like this.
So. I mean, my dad's been to Transdniestria, he's been to Moldova, but I think this is his most ambitious traveling project, but he's absolutely loving it. Yeah, he didn't like Belfast so much just because of the noise and the fumes and the traffic. But now we're out in the sticks. I can see almost a different man.
I'm glad to hear it. Yeah. Well, Bogota is tough. I mean, it's a capital city, and it's struggling to find itself, is what I say about it. But it's got something going on all the time. It's very bubbly. It's an effervescent city. You just have to know and have to sort of come to terms with Bogota. But anyway, so we've got Carl. Carl is a football expert. That's football.
Absolutely.
Soccer.
Yeah, 3 years.
And we're talking about, well, living in Colombia, and we're talking about football, soccer in Colombia. And Carl is here as a freelance journalist. He's English, and he's been here 3 years. He's an expert from the UK press, and he's decided to make his home here in Colombia. Anyway, at the moment, as we're talking, he is taking his father around the country. This is a big deal, you know, to bring your parents over to Colombia, to bring your father over to Colombia and show him that not everything is blowing up, and it is a good place to come and visit, and you're not going to get kidnapped. But Carl is an expert in soccer, and that's what we're principally talking about today. And what is exciting in Colombia is to go to a football match. Carl, if you were to say to anyone, if you had to go and see a football match, which football match and where would you go in particular?
Well, should we start with the national team? Are you mainly talking about a Colombian league game?
Let's start with the national team, like you say.
With the national team? Oh, yeah. Well, most of the national games, the team plays in Barranquilla on the coast now. And in contrast to in Bogota, the capital, because before Peckerman, the national coach, took over, there was a big debate. Where are we going to play? Are we going to play in that altitude of Bogota and use that as our advantage, or are we going to be playing the boiling heat of Barranquilla? And supposedly, the head coach Peckerman is very, very media shy. He refuses to talk to the media, and that's quite unusual in the modern era. But supposedly he asked all the players, hey, where do you want to play? And they all responded, Barranquilla is our house, and that's where we're going to be based. Now, I think that's for two reasons. One, unlike in Bogota, where it's always a little bit nervy, a bit edgy, I've seen lots of cases of crime, of violence boiling over in the terraces. In Barranquilla, it's a complete party. Everybody's just drinking, getting to know each other. It's a complete party. Second reason is historically, I think the most vociferous voice for the birth of Colombian football is Barranquilla. Some people say Santa Marta, some others even say Pasto, but I think Barranquilla argues the case the strongest. And so that was where football began in Colombia. So, yeah, if anybody can get to a game, it's an exciting time for Colombian football. They're on the brink of qualifying for the World Cup. It's the first time in 14 years, so there's a real buzz about it. Yeah, they're ranked third in the FIFA World Rankings, and whatever the problems there is and criticisms of the FIFA World Rankings, it does show that Colombian football is perhaps at its highest level ever. We will see next year, but it's doing well.
That's very exciting to be here in Colombia at this time. We are talking with Carl Warswick, a football expert. That's soccer to you, those of you in the United States. He's from the UK. This is Colombia Calling. We'll be right back. I'm Richard McCall.
You're tuned in to OverseasRadio.com, your online radio resource about life abroad.
My name is Jacob Hornberger. I'm president of the Future of Freedom Foundation, which Congressman Ron Paul awarded for having an outstanding freedom website. Write us at fff@fff.org, and we'll send you a free 3-month subscription to our monthly journal of libertarian essays and our booklet, Economic Liberty in the Constitution, which George Mason University economics professor Walter Williams praised in a recent column. That's fff@fff.org.
This is 90 Seconds with Joel Nagel on the Overseas Radio Network.
I have under $250,000 in assets I'd like to protect. I know of many people that recommend holding some of my assets in foreign currency. What percentage of this would you recommend and why?
Well, holding foreign currencies is sort of a natural add-on to the first issue, which is having a foreign bank account. Oftentimes people want to hedge their exposure. They want to protect themselves if something should happen to the U.S. dollar. They'd like to have some of their wealth in other currencies. We recommend that folks have at least 10 to 20% of their net worth denominated in currencies other than the dollar. We're not investment advisors, so we're not, it's not like we're trading currencies on a day-by-day basis, but there are currencies out there that over the long haul we think will be more safe and sound than the U.S. dollar, and these include currencies such as the Swiss franc, the currencies that we refer to as reserve currencies or natural reserve currencies such as Canada, New Zealand, and Australia. Also, the Singapore currency is very popular, as is the Brazilian real at the moment, but that's more of a, you know, that's more of a play on the success of the Brazilian economy at the moment. But those are the top foreign currencies for folks right now.
For more information on the 15 global strategies to protect your wealth, visit NagelLaw.com. That's NagelLaw.com.
You're tuned in to OverseasRadio.com, your online radio resource about life abroad.
Va subiendo la corriente, con chinchorro y atarraya, la canoa de Bareque, para llegar a la playa.
And we're back. This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McCall. We're talking about everything to do with Columbia, and this week we're talking about football, or soccer. And I'm here with Carl Warswick from the United Kingdom, a football expert, journalist, who writes everything about Colombian football. We've been talking about the Colombian national side, the Colombian national team, or the Cafeteros. Now, as Carl said, and of course, and their FIFA rankings, they're at number 3 in the world. They're a fantastic team to watch, and they're on the brink of qualifying for the World Cup for the first time since France 98, I believe, Carl.
That's right. Yeah, the first time since 1998. To understand the position they're in now, I think we've got to go back to 1994. They were so highly fancied. I remember when I was a 30-year-old boy, I saved up £10 and I put them on a bet for Colombia to win the World Cup. I wasn't the only one, I'm sure, because Pelé, during that time, and Johan Cruyff also said Colombia are going to win the World Cup. And because of many, many reasons, not least the influence of the narco traficantes, the drug dealing cartels, they flopped out in the first round. They only won one game. And then 2 weeks later, the vice captain, who was about to move to AC Milan, so the story goes, he had signed a contract with AC Milan, and he was shot dead in a Medellin car park. And that hung over Colombia, not just the football world, but especially the football world, but the whole of society for many, many years. That was seen as the golden generation. And they qualified for the next World Cup in 1998. They didn't do so well. For British listeners, they'll probably remember England playing Colombia during that tournament. And England won 2-0 and Colombia again went out in the first round. And since then, that dark cloud of that death, of one of their star men has hung over Colombia. And it's only now. And it's interesting to note that the manager now is one of the first foreign managers of the national team. There were a few in the past, but for a long, long time, they had a Colombian-based coach. And now they have an Argentine, Jose Peckerman, who's really brought a breath of fresh air to the team. And I don't think that's an accident. I think for all the glorious things that Maturana, the coach who qualified Colombia for the World Cup in 1990 and 1994, I think he was part of a select group of people that whenever there was any problems, the Colombian Federation would always return there to him to try and bail them out, and they became stale. And Mascherano was recently coaching in Saudi Arabia, and he's like a coach from a bygone era. Now they've got a Peckham, exciting, incredibly intelligent guy who works. I've been to many of the Colombian games where in the press conferences beforehand, he doesn't really like talking to the press, but when he's quizzed about it, he always says, I don't believe in individuals, I'm going to talk about the team. And that's something that's been crucial in getting Colombia to the point they're in now, because before Peckerman, there was Falcao, and now we've got, it's the balance of the team and the wide range of options that Colombia have. So if there is an injury to Falcao, there's always something to fall back on.
Yeah, I think you keep touching on the really important points. As one of them, I'm no football expert, I am a fan. I unfortunately seem to always support the underdog, and for many years here in Colombia were always the underdog, but it was always something. It was always an observation I could make, is that they never played as a team. And of course that was because the coaches who have been put in were always building the team or trying to build the team around Falcao, you know, the goal scorer who's recently signed for Monaco and will be going over there and probably score a hatload of goals, for the team there in the Principality of Monaco. But, you know, there are other great players in the team, and also when they work together, well, they can achieve. It's not just a striker, you know. Obviously, you need to score goals, but it's not just a striker. And of course, what there's the famous South America football pundit for the BBC, Tim Vickery, often describes the Andres Escobar incident. I mean, the murder of Andres Escobar post the World Cup in USA, when he was murdered in Medellin, as the sort of the when the joy went out of the beautiful game in Colombia. And like you say, Carl, this has been hanging over Colombia forever. I mean, for all of the time that we can remember, there hasn't been a joy. And like you say, now the joy is coming back. This is really important for Colombia.
Yeah, absolutely. Now the Andres Escobar thing, I think it's unfair to blame football for his death, but certainly if he hadn't scored that own goal in USA 1994, I don't think he would have been killed. And so, yeah, I think there is a direct link between football and his death. It was really, really sad, really unfortunate. And still today, we don't know the true story behind that. It's often a lot of stories from that era, from the 80s and 90s, where football was used as a vehicle to traffic money, but also as a sort of symbol of civic pride. You had Pablo Escobar, the infamous drug leader, controlling both the Medellin teams, not just Nacional, but also Independiente Medellin. You had the Rodriguez brothers in Cali and El Gacho, the Mexicano, in Bogotá, and some of the smaller teams also. It's impossible in a country that, during that period, was so awash with drug money that football wasn't going to be touched. It was inevitable. But from that, a lot of the stories, even today, are lost in rumour. People are still a bit nervous about talking about that. I've been talking to footballers where they refuse to talk about it. I've denied it blindly. I've threatened to walk out of interviews. And that happened when I first came here. And, that was quite a shock to hear. But the Andres Escobar, so when he was coming back on the plane, he was sat next to Dino Asprilla, and Andres Escobar was from a pretty middle-class family, was known within the ranks as being quite quiet as a leader, and it was not really the scandal that followed him. He was never in trouble, and he was sat next to Dino Asprilla, who was quite the opposite. And so the story goes, he said to Dino, "Now look, I know you like to go out, I know you like your women and your drinks, but please, it's going to be really dangerous going out now, just stay in." And, well, he ended up getting killed, and not Dino Asprilla. And maybe it was a case of, well, he's died and we don't like to speak ill of the dead, but I think everybody who has ever said anything about Andres Escobar would have said he was the moral heartbeat of the team. He was the one that was always disciplined, first on the pitch, last off the pitch. It's a really sad story. And he's the most famous footballer to have died, but there are many. He was the star of the team who was killed, but there are others that also fell the same way.
It's a really tragic story out of Colombia. Then, of course, something that's hung over the history of football and the history of the recent football in Colombia. But as we say, money laundering was rife. There was a period where the Colombian leagues thoroughly flourished, and possibly because they could keep the good players or pay the good players, or there were incentives for the referees or so on and so forth. There was all sorts of money laundering in every sense of the word. But today, are the leagues clear of this scourge? Be careful.
Well, I'm going to be difficult. I've got to be careful of what I say because I don't. There isn't. I haven't got any exact proof, but still, on drugs permeate throughout Colombian society. To say that Colombian football now is completely free of this influence, I think will be very far-fetched. I think it still does exist, but we've got to remember that 30 years of hiding, squirreling away money, and learning of the different ways to hide from the authorities. I think it's very difficult to find exact proof, but I still believe, personally, that yes, it does exist, and it does still finance some of the teams.
Yeah, it's a sad state of affairs, but anyway, we're going on to a brighter future here in Colombia. Things are going in the right direction, and the national team, as we said, are on the cusp of qualifying for the World Cup in Brazil, which is, it'll feel like playing at home, really. I mean, depending on which city they end up playing in, when they qualify, let's not jinx it. I'm here with Carl Warswick. He is a football soccer expert from the UK. He's been living in Colombia for 3 years. We're talking about everything football, everything about the sport, everything from money laundering to great players and the World Cup that's coming up in Brazil next year and the qualifying games. So this is Colombia Calling, and please don't go away. We'll be right back.
Your expatriation destination. This is OverseasRadio.com.
Just finished school? Newly retired? Looking for a change? Get certified to teach English and move abroad like thousands do every year. Global TESOL College comes to Costa Rica, the global organization that trains and certifies more ESL instructors than any other organization of its kind. For the past 15 years, we've trained and certified over 40,000 graduates in the field of TESOL. Live the dream of staying and studying at the beach. You will be living at one of our beautifully centrally located accommodation options in Jaco Beach on Costa Rica's Pacific Coast. With a school, beach, and great restaurants all within walking distance, in a safe community with all the convenience of back home, discover why so many choose to earn their teaching certificate in Jaco Beach, Costa Rica. Visit us today for more information at www.globaltesolcostarica.com. That's global TESOL CostaRica.com. Mention this ad when you enroll and receive $50 off your tuition. Enroll with a friend and receive $100 off. The world is waiting for you, and Global TESOL College is your ticket.
Live call-in shows and hosts from your favorite countries. This is the Overseas Radio Network.
Va subiendo la corriente con chinchorro y atarraya.
And we're back. This is Colombia Calling. I'm Richard McCall, your host. We're talking about all things Colombia, but in particular, football or soccer to those of you in the United States. I'm here with a football expert, journalist from the UK, Carl Warswick, who has been here for almost 3 years, and he writes about the Colombian leagues, about Colombian national team, and for the Anglo Press. We've been talking about the Colombian national team, World Cup qualifying, money laundering, Escobar's influence, Andres Escobar's death, the tragic murder of Andres Escobar post-World Cup. But we want to talk about some more positive things. We want to talk about Colombia going to the World Cup. We want to talk about what that means to Colombia and, what could potentially happen. Carl, you go to the games. You've been to Barranquilla. You've been in that party atmosphere at the Barranquilla Stadium where the national team play their games. you know, what can we expect for the national team in the coming months?
Well, the expectations of this team, we're going to be a little bit careful, and I think Pakenham will understand this perfectly, because I think one of the key reasons why the 1994 team flopped so badly is that of the expectations that the press bought it, everybody bought it, the federation bought it, everybody believed in Colombia that they were going to win the World Cup. And so when it went so badly wrong, it was like a balloon being popped and people lost interest. And it was, I think to a certain degree, that 5-0 win against Argentina that qualified them for the World Cup. I don't think I'm exaggerating it here, saying that it was one of the most extraordinary games of all time. Colombia on their home ground were torn apart by Argentina on the home ground were torn about by Colombia, and that really swelled the confidence to such a degree that when it did fall apart, it had some devastating results. Now this time, the big difference, as I've already talked about, is that we have another sort of, dare I say, golden generation. But the big difference now is that we have Peckman, who takes no crap from anybody. He is very methodical. He's very, very studious. But he also maintains. This is something that's ignored quite a lot when a lot of journalists talk about Peckman. They focus in on his abilities to sort of strategically manage the team and create that balance and relieve that pressure from Falcao. But also, he's very, very good at talking to the players and creating that sort of party atmosphere in which he just tells them to go out there and have a great time. Now, when I'm in Barranquilla, I'm normally, my head's buried in a computer in the press section, so I'm probably not the best person to ask regarding the atmosphere in the ground, but it's impossible to miss that everybody is, especially before the end, this is incredible atmosphere of people in the bars and everybody's hugging each other and dancing around. There's really, really loud music everywhere. And that's reflecting the fact that they, since Peckerman took over, they've won every single game in Barranquilla. So I think deep down, I have high expectations, but still we've got to be a bit cautious in not getting carried away.
Of course, that's always the way. But I mean, as we say, if you're coming to Colombia and it coincides with a game and you can't get to Barranquilla, you know, where they play their home games, get to a bar, put a yellow shirt on, and you'll be everyone's best friend.
Absolutely. That's very, very true.
The carnival spirit and you know. Okay, so maybe they draw away with Argentina. That's not a bad result, you know. And people were saying, oh, no, that's a good result. And then when we come home and we play Bolivia or play Peru or whatever, and we put 2, 3, 4, 5 past them, that's a great result. And then we have a party.
Mm-hmm. Well, that game against Argentina where obviously parallels were made between that game 20 years ago. To get a point there, that was an absolutely fantastic result in my eyes. But more importantly was being professional and seeing off Bolivia at home and getting that 3 points, which, now I'm going to be at the next game against Ecuador, which I think is September 6th or 7th.
Yes.
We're going to be making a program, a documentary for a program called FIFA Football Mundial, and it's broadcast across 80 countries around the world, and it's going to be mainly about Colombian football, that version. So if they can beat Ecuador, Ecuador and the best of travellers, but if Colombia can beat them, then I think World Cup qualification will be secured for the first time in 14 years, which will send the country into a fury of endless aguardiente and fast.
Aguardiente. I live here in Bogota on the main road, on the Carrera Séptima. I don't think I'll be able to sleep that evening, so better off that I go out and party as well, because everyone will be driving up and down, honking their horns, flags flying. Oh, there'll just be that euphoria, you know. It'll be like winning the World Cup.
Yeah, and you can see how in 1994, in that dark era, how football was used as a tool of mass distraction. With all the horrible things that's going on, let's enjoy football. Because this is something that we can use to escape our problems. And Colombia is not unique in using football in that way. But I see, one of the reasons why I came here, I see that the influence of the sort of connection between politics, society, and football as being one of the strongest here, right, and in comparison to other countries.
Yeah, it's true. I want to mention a little bit. I've been reading up on your articles that you've been writing in various publications. In particular, there was one called In the Blizzard, which is a very in-depth article all about the history of our football in Colombia. I mean, how did you investigate the relation? We're talking politics a little bit here, politics and football, the relationship between the assassination of a presidential hopeful, Gaitán, which, you know, was the spark for the Bogotazo, where Bogotá, the center of Bogotá, was razed to the ground, and, you know, again, a spark for revolution in the country, slightly. I don't want to put myself out there and say it was, but it was a spark. You investigated all of this, and there's a link to the murder of Gaitán and the creation of the Colombian Football League.
Well, so there are three reasons, really. It all started, well, obviously my background is in left-wing journalism, and so I was kind of interested in this figure, Gaitán, when I came over, and his sort of exploration of using the Liberal Party and dragging it to the left. And then he dropped out of the Liberal Party because he thought it was a lost cause, and then he came back into the Liberal Party, so that really, really fascinated me. And also, having read a lot of Fidel Castro's speeches, and Fidel wrote a book about how Gaitán was a huge influence on him, not just in the way Gaitán was very charismatic in the way he spoke, but also in that period before Gaitán was shot dead, the very same day Fidel Castro, as a 22-year-old law student, had a meeting penned in with Gaitán. And Gaitán was just going to go for dinner and then meet Fidel Castro, but of course Gaitán died. And in the anarchy that exploded afterwards, Fidel Castro, who was trapped in the middle of this, decided that he came to the conclusion that the democratic sort of party political road to democracy or freedom or equality or whatever he thought was not the correct way. And so that's why one of the big reasons he took to the hills in Cuba. So that, to me, was just one of the most important events of the 20th century. And if he hadn't have been killed, we might have seen a very, very different Colombia today. Now, the second reason why I started to explore that was because in 2011, I met one of the most famous, probably the most famous British journalist called Jonathan Wilson. And he came to Colombia, and we spent a month traveling together. And he just set up this new magazine or book, and he said to me, hey, do you fancy writing an in-depth article about that? So that got me speaking to people, and I met the Colombian official statistician of the Colombian Football League, and he just said something very off the cuff but very interesting to me. He said that if Gaitán hadn't been killed, the Colombian Football League may have been delayed by several years. So that link, my political background and my passion for football, was something I really thought I had to go out and investigate. So I spent many, many hours in the Luis Ángel Arango library, searching through all the newspapers, speaking to people, spoke to an ex-player, El Caiman, who was the goalkeeper in the 1962 World Cup when Colombia qualified for the first time, and he had some very interesting stories to tell as well about that. There's two worlds colliding, the political and the football world. So yeah, that really tickled all my all my fancies. That ticked all my boxes, and away I went. And yeah, it's about 10,000 words.
I mean,
a bit carried away.
Yeah, I think no, you're fine. I think you'd be hard pushed to find, more than five Colombians out there who realize this, who know this story. I mean, how are you going to get this story over to them?
One day, my current plan, as I mentioned before, is to try and move into writing for the Colombian media. So I would like to write about these things, but before that, perhaps, I'm exploring the possibilities of writing a book all about football and politics and how various actors in Colombian life have used football as a tool to manipulate and force their message on, whether it be the guerrillas or the paramilitaries or the government or the drug bars or just anybody with power has used football. And that's something for me is very, very fascinating.
Mm. Well, I'd be more than happy to help you out on that in any way. You may or may not know, I did an investigation into Jack Greenwell, who was an Englishman who played for Barcelona a few years ago in the 1940s, 1930s. Anyway, he ended up coming to Colombia, coaching in Colombia, started being the first coach for Santa Fe from Bogota, and he passed away here in Colombia and is buried in the British cemetery. So, you know, if you're going to go into that, I can help you out. But we've been talking to Carl Warswick, who is a football journalist in general from the UK, and he talks about everything to do with football. Look him up. Look up his articles. If you see the name Carl Warswick on any piece that's out there, you know it's going to be well written. You know it's well investigated. Just listen to this interview that we've done today. This man goes in depth. If you're missing quality journalism, I urge you to look for Carl Warswick's pieces. So thank you very much, Carl, for your time.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me. And yeah, let's go down to that graveyard one day and check out this legend of English and Colombian football.
Exactly. All right. Well, thank you, Carl. I'm Richard McCall. I'm your host. This is Colombia Calling. Thank you very much for listening.
From China's Great Wall to the Leaning Tower of Pisa.